Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and we're archived on our homepage. So if you can't listen to the entire show or if you want to hear it again at a later date, just look us up, click and poke. And today we've got a doubleheader in one person. Tammy Flanagan is very well known to our audience and to others. She's a columnist for Government Executive Magazine. She's with a specialist, I guess, senior benefit specialist with the National Institute of Transition Planning, and she frequently does the Your Turn, For Your Benefit show every Monday here on WFED. So, Tammy, thank you for coming in on this beautiful day.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Good morning.
We got a lot of fan mail for you. And by the way, our telephone number here, if you have a question for Tammy, is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. And you can give us a call. We'll take it. And here's a question from John at OPM. And he's talking about your article in Government Executive last week, and he relates it to his situation. He said, I have about $400,000 in my TSP after a 36% hit. I guess that's for taxes. And my TSP estimated $2,100 in a monthly annuity. If Tammy is correct in her article, shouldn't I receive 80% of $6,000 or about $4,800 per month? Just getting off this TSP watch ride will be worth retiring for. Having maxed out my contributions since becoming a Fed in 1992, the trip I and all other TSP Feds have been on is like riding the Beltway blindfolded. You know the hit's coming, just not when, by what, or how badly. I had to stick with a C fund like so many others after serious losses because I don't buy high and sell low. I'm heading out June 2013 and like to plan ahead. Got to recoup the losses until January 2013, and then it all goes into the G fund. Thanks for keeping up the good work. A lot of questions there.
Well, he's referring to a column I wrote about comparing. I was trying to compare or at least give some sense of security to someone who transferred from the old system to the new. And, you know, we all think, oh, my goodness, what was he thinking to transfer from civil service to FERS? So this guy had done that back in 87. He only had 5 years under civil service, wasn't sure about his future, so he decided that FERS would be more flexible, which it was. But here he is now, you know, 30 years of government service, and he didn't leave. He's under FERS, you know, and thinking he made this terrible mistake. So my column was showing that even though he switched to FERS and he has a much smaller basic annuity, and he has his Social Security coverage, and now he's really done a good job of saving in his TSP. He saved up $500,000, or he will have that, or he plans to have that in the next 5 years. So what I was showing in the column was that between his FERS basic benefit, his Social Security benefit, that those two alone would bring him within $6,000 a year of what he would have had he stayed under civil service.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So all he needed to do was withdraw, you know, $6,000 a year from his $500,000 in the thrift, and he would be where he was if he had stayed under civil service. And I think some people were misinterpreting what I said to think that that's all he could take out of the thrift. You can take as much as
sure.
you want out.
Take it all out.
If you want. But I think easily he could take out $6,000 this year, $7,000 next year, and even make up for the so-called diet colas of FERS, where he's not going to get a cost of living until he's 62, he should still be okay. So my point was trying to say that you could switch to FERS, you could be under FERS, and still have a retirement comparable to what your coworkers under the old system had. It's the future I'm worried about, you know, for the new kids coming out of college that might just have a retirement called SAVE. But I think FERS is actually, you know, I think it's a great system compared to what it could be.
Well, the email we got from John at OPM, too, he's talking about having $400,000 in his TSP.
He's done very well.
He's done well, and he's kind of lamenting the ups and downs of the stock market. But if he stayed in the C fund, that was smart. Had he sold, he would have been selling low back in 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and just now be recovering. But I think the stock market is at an all-time high right now.
Yeah, it's doing really good right now. And that's the thing. You can't really watch it day to day because
exactly.
You drive yourself crazy and you
right.
do the wrong thing. I think what you do need to do, and what scares me about what he wrote, is he says in 2013 it all goes in the G fund. Apparently he's thinking in terms of being retired and just keeping it, playing it safe.
Yeah.
But he might be playing it too safe. I think you still need to be diversified. You know, I'm not the financial advisor. I always have to qualify that. But from what I understand about financial planning, you still have to have diversifications to have growth. and it takes a little risk.
Right. Neither one of us can or should be giving financial advice.
Right.
But the reason they set up that present day life cycle fund is for the purpose you state. It's to give you stocks, bonds, and you have minimal exposure to the stock market, but you do have some.
That's
so
right.
That's another thing that John might want to consider.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
you think he's done very well and
and
okay, very good. All right, here's one from Alan at IRS. Here's a question I'm hoping Tammy Flanagan can address. I'm a CSRS employee who will have 39 years service in July 2012. I plan to retire near that date and would like to know what's the best date to retire. I want to be sure to get my annuity check for July and also work the maximum days possible. What effect would the July 4th holiday have on my decision? While it would be nice to get paid for the July 4th holiday, I don't want that decision to jeopardize my July annuity payment.
Yeah, he missed that boat. It used to be last couple of years, maybe not even last year, but the year before and the year before that, you could have retired, let's say, July 3rd, and that would have been the July 4th holiday, and it would have been perfect for CSRS. But the thing you have to realize is, and this is only for civil service retirement, the old system, as we call it, that you can retire on the first, second, or third day of the month, and your retirement will begin the next day. So you could retire July 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, and you would still get a check for the month of July. It may not come in August, but it may come, you know, next July, but you will still get a check paid back to that month. Where if he was to retire on July 4th, sure, he would get paid for the holiday, but he would lose out the whole July retirement check. And especially for a CSRS employee, where they might be replacing 50 to 80% of their salary with that retirement, that's not a good trade-off. So I would forfeit the last holiday and still go out no later than July 3rd, which I think this year is probably like a Tuesday. And if you wanted to retire on June 30th, I guess, you know, that's the end of the pay period, that's the Saturday, that would be fine too. There's nothing wrong with June 30th. The benefit of staying until July 3rd for a CSRS employee this year would be it would give them three more days of salary, or two more days of salary, actually, because Sunday's not a salary day, but three more days of service, which they might need if they're short a couple of days to get to another month. But there's no big advantage of staying till July 3rd unless you need those extra 3 days. So June 30th is fine. July 3rd is okay. I would not retire July 4th to get the holiday. That's definitely a no.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. We've talked about this before, but some people really get down in the weeds with this and want an extra day. And in the past, the columns that I've done based on what you have done, we tend to focus on the end of the year, the popular months, December and January.
Right.
And that's when it really gets into it, and we can maybe talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's one from... I just want us to say, it says, will there be a second round of buyouts later in FY 2012 or early 2013? Short answer, we don't know. March is sort of the end of the buyout season because that's when it ceases to be financially beneficial for agencies to pay people to leave. But given the budget ramifications and the talk about sequestration in 2013, January 2013, and what may even happen over the summer, I would say there's a good chance that the buyouts will pick up again in October of this year, that being the start of the 2013 fiscal year. And you mentioned that it was a census is doing buyouts right now.
That's right. Yep.
And they have 400 spaces. They've got 200 people who've applied for them, and they have to be off the rolls by the end of this month. So they're still popping up for places.
Yeah, there are several places I've been lately where that's become a talk of the town.
Right.
And others where it's not happening at all.
Yeah.
It just depends on the budget. Like you said, the budget of the agency.
Yeah. He says, this is interesting. We definitely won't identify it, but he says, I work at an agency where the computers are monitored when telework was initiated at our agency. So if your mouse isn't constantly moving, the boss knows it. So I'll bet some people have gotten ways around that. But he said, I want to contribute the TSP Roth IRA before I retire. So the best date, which I read somewhere, was November 3rd, 2012 for FY13. Is this still accurate? And I'm not sure what he's talking about here.
Well, there is a benefit to November 3rd only because it is the last day of a pay period. It's the last day of leave period number 22 this year. And for someone who's not trying to save up a lot of leave, you know, maybe that's a good date for them because they'll get out before the crowds at the end of the year, and you know they're not worried about saving up those extra couple of accumulations of leave that they'd get if they stayed another four or five pay periods. Another benefit I'd say to November 3rd, for especially for a FERS employee who's high salary, would be if they leave on November 3rd, there's a good chance they're going to get their lump sum payment for their unused annual leave this year, which you might think, why would you want your leave check this year? Well, if you're maxed out on the Social Security tax, which is at $110,100 this year. So if you make above $110,100, you stop paying the FICA tax. That's the 4.2% payroll tax. So if you cashed in your leave this year and it's considered part of this year's income, then you might not have to pay the 4.2% tax.
Wow. Okay. Need to take a short break here. We'll be right back talking with Tammy Flanagan about the best day for you to retire.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Where this all converges is with the end user. The end user having a tablet kind of a device or a smartphone needs to have access to any of those types of applications. They don't care where they're running. They just know that from their immediate device, they need to have it and they need the result quickly. And this is where the Federated Identity Management interacts with the application and the data fabric, which interacts with the cloud-based infrastructure, and it all comes together to provide that high-performance, real-time, agile, and secure capability for the end user."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Did the man killed in the Toulouse, France standoff with the police have an accomplice when he killed seven people before his own demise? A video apparently showing a gunman's attacks on soldiers and a Jewish school was sent to Al Jazeera television network. But after he was dead, Al Jazeera decided not to air the video, which allegedly was filmed from the killer's point of view and shows his victims' anguish before their deaths. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
To the obstetricians that brought us into this world, and the pediatricians who gave us the chance to grow up strong, to the cardiologists who really get our blood flowing, and the orthopedists who mend us when we're broken, to the ophthalmologists who help us put things in perspective, the neurologists and psychiatrists who genuinely care about how we think and feel, and the dermatologists whose expertise is more than skin deep, the rheumatologists who keep us limber for a lifetime, to the urologists, nephrologists, and gastroenterologists who tirelessly try to keep our bodies running clean, to all of the 16,658 primary care doctors, specialists, and other ologists at Kaiser Permanente who truly care about delivering high-quality, affordable healthcare services to their patients and communities, we salute you. Kaiser Permanente, may we all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for March is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Organ donation is needed now more than ever before. There are more than 110,000 individuals awaiting a transplant to save their lives, and each one of us has the power to help. Register to become an organ, eye, and tissue donor whenever obtaining or renewing your driver's license, or do it online today at beadonor.org. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com, search charities. Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She's a columnist for Government Executive Magazine and a co-host here on the four-year benefit show that is on WFED 1500 every Monday at 10 o'clock. And you co-host along with Bob Lyons, occasionally John Elliott, and other experts in the field. Gotten a number of emails this morning for Tammy. We've been going through those on the subject being the best day to retire. And that's something that Tammy invented, discovered, pioneered, and I latched onto it. And it's when I do it, and I think when you do it, it's among the most popular columns of the year because you would think it's
like
a no-brainer. But yeah, it is very important. And as we were saying during the break, when it started, it was fairly important, and you knew the December 31st, January 3rd formula, but so much has changed. Now you can look at it on a monthly basis. Here's an email from Kathy with the Census Bureau, and she says, can you run this by Tammy to see if she agrees? I have 17 years of service, and she'll be in her 60s in August 2012. I think the best date for me is January 11th, 2013. The last day of the 27th pay period is January 12th. One, I can get an extra 8 hours of annual leave accrual. Two, there will be two pay periods in 2013, pay periods 26 and 27, that I can put all of my salary minus deductions into the TSP. Smart move. Three, an extra holiday, New Year's Day. Four, the last pay period's check earned in January is more than my monthly annuity, so it's no loss that my annuity won't start until February 1. Can you run these by Tammy and see if she agrees?
Yeah, this is what we were talking about during the break. I was saying that, you know, sometimes we're kind of rethinking this best date being the last day of the month because people like Kathy, who have 17 years of service, her FERS retirement's only going to be worth 17% of her high three, which is less than a two-week paycheck. So she's pointing out the fact that if she stays till the middle of January or the 11th of January, which is the end of the leave year for 2012, she picks up some advantages. Although she is losing that 1 month of retirement check, she's picking up a paycheck, she's getting a holiday, she's putting more money in her thrift, and she's getting that last accumulation of leave that's still going to be part of the 2012, you know, use or lose basket, that she's not going to have to worry about losing any of that. So I think the benefits outweigh the negative. As she points out, I agree with her that I think January 11th for some FERS employees might be the better date to retire. And then we're going to face that again in 2014, because the end of 2013, you're still only going to get 50% of your sick leave credit. But if you retire January 1st of 2014, you'll get 100%. And that year, just like this year, the leave year is going to end near the middle of the month. So that's another year that I'm going to say that mid-January is probably going to be the better date for FERS employees. So these next 2 years, you know, look at that last leave period of the year, which next year it's January 12th, you know, the 11th is the Friday, so that's, you know, not a bad date.
That's another wrinkle that I hadn't thought of, the sick leave transition. Right now, people under the FERS system who retire, they can cash in their accumulated sick leave or do they apply it to their retirement or do they cash it in?
No, the sick leave is going to be just like with civil service. So if you had 1,000 hours of sick leave,
counts
you have
for
about
service
6 months
time.
Of service
okay.
credit, right?
So right now, if they had a year of sick leave saved up and you're a FERS employee and you retire this year, you'd get credit for 6 months.
That's right.
If you wait until January of 2013,
14.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, then you'll get a full year's credit for
that's
it.
Right.
So that's a major consideration.
Yeah,
it's funny that with the retirement tsunami apparently rolling along, that could cause a bump and keep people on the job through 2013.
Yeah, because now it's within sight. We can start planning on, we're seeing that difference. I mean, it's not going to be a huge amount of money for someone, but I would never tell a FERS employee if you're sick, you know, use your sick leave.
Sure.
But if you have it left over, you know, at least you're going to get some money for it. You're going to get some credit for it in the retirement calculation.
And some people have huge balances. I mean, they have a year or two mm-hmm. of extra service time, which can really, really add up. How much, what is a year of service time for CSRS and FERS?
Well, under the old system, if you had saved up a year, and by the way, it takes 20 years to earn a year of sick leave. So this means somebody's been very healthy and haven't had to use much. So if you had saved up 2,087 hours equivalent to a year, that's worth 2% of your high three. So if your high three is $60,000, then you've just added $100 a month onto your retirement check. Now, if you're a FERS employee, cut that in half because 1 year of service under FERS is typically worth 1% of your high three. So 1 year of sick leave under FERS for the same $60,000 high three would be worth $50 a month.
Okay.
Still something.
Amazing. Yeah, there really is a lot of ways to slice and dice this.
Yeah.
By the way, our number is 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. Tammy, is there a way to sort of slice and dice this by month? I mean, is it, would the best day to retire in, for instance, January of this year, would it be different than the best day to retire in May or September?
Yeah, well, there's some general rules of thumb just to keep in mind. And I guess before you say anything, as the first thing is to make sure that, because I think people confuse this best date to retire with, can I afford to retire? And am I mentally ready for this change in my life? You know, that's a whole separate issue. What I'm talking about is once you're ready to fill out the retirement application, you know you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to decide, do I go the end of March, the end of April? Do I wait till the 1st of June? Well, the first thing is to think about the fact that if you retire any day of the month for FERS, in any day of the month other than the first three for CSRS, your retirement's not going to start to accrue until the first day of the following month. So if I was to retire today, March 21st, my salary would stop, close the business today, and my first retirement check would be the month of April. So I'd be essentially losing a couple of weeks' pay. So it'd be better if I wait till the last day of March. So the end of the month is always good. Now, if you're CSRS, you have that grace period of 3 days every month. So if the pay period is going to end on the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, and it's going to get you to the end of the week, and your CSRS or CSRS offset, then wait till the 2nd or 3rd. You pick up another accumulation of leave, get a full paycheck, and you'll still get a retirement check for the rest of that month. Now, the thing I'm adding to this now is for FERS employees who might only have 20 years of service or 15 years of service when they retire, that 1 month of FERS benefits only going to be worth, you know, 15-20% of their salary. So for them, maybe working until the first full pay period of that month, going out the middle of the month, will pick up another paycheck. They'll forfeit a month of retirement pay, but that trade-off might be worth more.
And so, I hear from people, and I'm math challenged, as anybody who knows me knows. But I've heard people say that after working for a certain amount of time, that they're losing, that they would be better off retired. Is that true, or is that an urban myth?
Well, I had a lady the other day saying that, you know, she'd just like to ease into retirement. And I said, well, how many years service do you have? And she says, well, I have 38. And I had to think to myself, well, if she has 38 years under civil service, her retirement is going to be worth 72% of her high three. And when you consider the fact that she's going to pay tax on 72% of her income, not 100%, she's not going to pay retirement contributions, she's not going to contribute to the thrift, she's not going to pay the Medicare tax, her retirement just for staying home every day is about as much as what she's bringing home coming to work. So for her to switch from full-time to part-time at the end of her career, she would lose money. Because she'd make more money just staying home and taking a part-time job at Walmart. She'd be ahead of the game. So there comes a point in time when the amount of income that your retirement's going to replace is as much as what you're making coming to work every day. You have to start to think, is it really worth coming to work and continuing on in that same career versus retiring? And if you want to work, you can still work. You can collect your retirement and then have another paycheck.
Okay. You know, the advantage of staying in touch with people that you've known, you know, on a beat like yours and mine, is after the fact, sometimes after they're retired, you learn an awful lot about how things really work. And one time I was talking to someone who had headed the retirement operation at OPM for many years, a very loyal, wonderful civil servant. But after he got out of the constraints of it, he told me one time, and he's not a type that's given to exaggeration, he said there has never been a single piece of legislation regarding the federal retirement system that didn't personally benefit some member of Congress or some congressional staffer. And when we keep talking about this retiring January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, there was a reason for that. It was done because Congress was in session or some members of Congress needed. Do you know what that was?
I've heard the urban myth, and so I'll spread it out. I'm not proud. I heard the reason for the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd for civil service was there was some congressman or some group of congressmen who were going to retire the end of December, but the vote was going to be taken at the end of the week, I guess, which was January 3rd. So they extended the law to allow them to retire on the 3rd so they could take that final vote before they retired. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea.
You know, I think maybe it is. That stirs memories in me, and I know there was another retirement.
I might have heard that from you.
Right, okay. Well, then we know it's not an urban myth. Yeah, that's scary when you find out you're the source.
You're the source.
We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Meeting Mission Goals Through Health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Department of Health and Human Services wants to use Twitter to stay ahead of health issues. The department is sponsoring a contest hoping to get developers to create web applications that can spot emerging signs of health problems in communities in real time. HHS says in the past, social media has provided some of the first clues to disease outbreaks, but public health officials so far haven't been able to spot those trends until after the fact. The winner of the real-time web app contest will get $21,000.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Profile America, Wednesday, March 28th. One of the most frightening industrial accidents in the U.S. occurred on this date in 1979. It was 4 a.m. at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant on the Susquehanna River, south of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. A cascading chain of events started when someone mistakenly cross-connected air and water lines in the plant's number 2 reactor. Before the crisis was over, the plant reportedly came close to a hydrogen gas explosion and a meltdown of its uranium core, which would have caused extensive radiation contamination. The incident sparked a large-scale review of how nuclear power plants were built and operated. Today, there are 104 such generating plants across the country, producing nearly one-fifth of the country's electricity. Profile America is in its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Boron.
Insects use tiny hairs to help them climb smooth walls. The gecko lizard does the same thing with a lot more weight. That has engineers intrigued. Gecko toes have unique hair-like structures that are soft enough to conform to a surface but are attached to tendons stiff enough to support weight, while they easily stick and unstick to a wall.
It's a really novel set of properties from the perspective of engineers.
Al Crosby of the University of Massachusetts has mimicked that with a reusable rubber-coated fabric engineered to have an easily reversible yet very strong adhesiveness.
It can hold up to 700 pounds, and then with a little flip of the wrist, you can take it off with virtually no effort.
Crosby says the new tape can hold a flat-screen TV on your wall for at least as long as a ball game and not leave a mark when you take it down. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey, and my guest is Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executive Association. And the Senior Executive Service has been in the media spotlight lately. Several members of Congress have questioned, I guess, the experience and the quality of people in the Senior Executive Service. Now, the SES is 7,000-plus career people, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and these are the elite, the old super grades from the old days, the GS-16, 17, and 18 back in the day before the Carter administration implemented civil service reform.
Indeed.
And the idea is that they're supposed to be judged closer and watch more carefully and move around, be mobile and all that. And that the mobility thing is the issue. Several members of Congress have said that the SES people lack experience because they've only a majority of them have only been in one agency. Is that what they're saying?
Well, actually, that's what one member of Congress said.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of the report of the Partnership Council was interesting because no one disagrees with anything we can do to make opportunities for mobility more prevalent than they are right now. But the argument was that 48% of executives have never changed positions since joining the SES. But the problem I've got with that is that in the same report, the average time in the current SES position is 3.5 years. So with the average time in the SES is at 6.5 years. So if someone hasn't changed a position in 3.5 years, that doesn't worry me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember in private sector days, my old newspaper, they would fast track people. It's kind of like the SES, and they had you slated for greatness to do good things, and that involved getting experience in different departments, and it makes sense in a way. But what I saw happening all during that time period was that somebody would go into a job knowing it was temporary, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, but they were denying somebody else the chance to get experience at that job, and they were pushing aside somebody who might have been there, been a lifer, and been the best person possible. And I saw that happen again and again.
Well, the fact of the matter is there really that a senior executive needs both leadership and administrative talents as well as the technical professional knowledge of the program in question. So it's not surprising that there are some agencies, some programs, some positions where that longtime experience is valuable and necessary.
Got an interesting email from a woman who worked at NASA for many years, and she said, "I don't know what prompted Congress to think SES was a good idea, but at the time they started, there was a popular management theory that thought that good managers should be able to get good results no matter what business they were managing." And she pointed out some examples of companies buying other companies. They had nothing in common. They knew nothing about mm-hmm. them, and they were disasters.
Well, and that's why I think it's that having everyone mobile is never going to be the absolute norm. So what you want to do is promote some professional revitalization, enable people who want to be mobile to do it. And we don't have the mechanisms in place to enable that to happen. We don't have it at the SES level, and we don't have it at the place just below the SES, that is to say those who are aspiring to the SES. There's nothing in place that helps them to move around if they want to do it.
Well, I could see, too, and several people who emailed us made this point, that if you get an agency, the one most commonly cited was NASA, but you can get any agency with a scientific mission, NIH, the various places like that, where oftentimes the SES people came up from the ranks, so they know the agency. But the work is unique, and it's not the kind of thing that's necessarily transferable. Management skills aside, the expertise in running it is not necessarily transferable.
Well, that's right. And it kind of reminds me, I spent a year in electrical engineering school once upon a time, and we had to take a class in foundry, and we had to work in metal machining. And the idea was you're going to run an operation like this one day that's going to involve some of this, you better know how it's done. And I think that that's really what we're saying in some of these agencies. Some executives, some kinds of functions and positions are more amenable to this than others. And I think the real issue is that if you're going to undertake a mobility program, you want it to be something that's handled in a way that benefits both the agency and the executive, and that's managed intelligently.
Well, in the 1970s, Dr. Lawrence Peter, and I forget the name of the other fellow, but they co-authored a book, and it was called The Peter Principle. And I got a chance to meet him, and I believe he was the father-in-law of Senator Boren of Oklahoma, but you know, very prominent family, very smart fellow. And they did this sort of tongue-in-cheek book that was witty, but also it had a point. And the idea was, I remember it maybe, the idea was you eventually get promoted to your level of incompetence, and then you don't get promoted anymore. You know, and if somebody has been doing the same job for 10 years, that worries me a little bit. But, I mean, there's some truth to that, isn't it?
Well, you know, these days, though, I look at how these positions have changed. I mean, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I just don't think that there was the level of intensity, the kinds of challenges there are today. Just looking at the performance management system alone, the kinds of standards these executives are being held to, it's a much tougher job. And I don't think it's a matter of being on automatic pilot, no matter how long you've been there.
Well, the thing that I've noticed, the change over the years, is a lot of it is technological, too, with BlackBerries and smartphones and that kind of thing. A lot of people, but government executives, probably almost all of them, are on call 24/7.
They are. And I look at emails that have been sent to me at 5 a.m. It's why, as I've said to you a number of times, that a lot of GS-14s and 15s who'd make terrific executives look at this, and that's one of the issues that concerns them, among others. And they say, you know, that's just not for me. I want a life.
Got an email here from Mike at Social Security, and he says, I wonder, with the calls to reduce the federal workforce by only replacing one person for every three, that if that applies to the SES people, or are we going to have fewer troops but the same number of leaders? And he said, switching around executives between agencies is nuts. You want defense run by somebody who was at FDA or vice versa? You need people running things that understand the business, or you will just get the lower-level managers blowing smoke up there, censored.
Well, it's true. You know, it's interesting. I got a lot of comments in response to the partnerships report and Congressman Moran's remarks. And one of them was from a young fellow, actually, I think he's in his mid-30s, who's a senior executive, and said he's going to give me the young whippersnapper point of view. And he said, you know, my generation, sure, we want to be mobile. But we want it to be our choice. We don't want it to be imposed upon us. And so I think there's a way to achieve more mobility, but again, not with the notion that it's ever going to be the total norm of musical chairs.
That's right. Again, you have specific agencies that have a scientific mission or a medical mission. I think some agencies like the IRS move people around quite a bit at the very top for reasons. They don't want you to become too much a part of the community if you're auditing their taxes and doing that sort of thing. So they move them around.
Indeed. And you know, when you enter the IRS, that if you want to be on that executive track to move up, you're going to move around. And so they do have a breadth of experience in that agency.
I was a guest this morning with Tom Timmon and Emily Kopp, and Emily gave me a question to ask you, and it's a good question. We're talking about today's column. My column, in fact, is about if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. You know, that idea, keep the executives happy. What's morale like in the SES?
Well, you know, I think it's certainly been a lot better in the past. It's just, it's tough because obviously, like all other federal employees, they're under the pay freeze. Their performance awards have been cut back. And now there seem to be a series of proposed legislation that's directed at them. For example, we have a proposal or a bill that was reported out that would require that if an agency or department did not meet its goal in terms of a small business, that no executive in that agency would receive a performance award, irrespective of whether they had anything to do with procurement or small business at all. That's a real perversion of a pay-for-performance system.
We're going to pause at perversion here. We'll hold that thought. We'll be right back here, 1500 AM.
Here's Neil Tipton, Director of Information Sharing and Partner Engagement at DoD, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference.
Where we implement in common all those underlying things of the infrastructure and the enterprise that make that work, that has to be where we go, because we can't afford to do it any other way. From an information sharing perspective, from a secure the information perspective, and from a fiscal perspective.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for the first of its TechNet Land Forces conference series. Recently evolved from the annual Land War Net conference, these events will provide a forum for all services to discuss operational issues. The Southwest Conference, being held March 27th through 29th in Tucson, will focus on training tomorrow's cyber warriors, mobile communications on the battlefield, and defending the cyberspace. Register to attend or exhibit at www.technetlandforces.org. That's technetlandforces.org.
Caps fans, don't miss a big upcoming battle at Verizon Center against the Montreal Canadiens on Fan Appreciation Day, Saturday, March 31st at 7 p.m. as the Caps continue their drive for the playoffs powered by Constellation Energy. The Caps look to pick up valuable points to secure an Eastern Conference playoff spot. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped up, always a great time, and there are only two home games left in the regular season. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to WashingtonCaps.com/singletix and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the wish wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and this week's Experts in Health topic is colorectal cancer, featuring Dr. Manish Jain, primary care physician for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the Kaiser Permanente West End Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Manish Jain, and I want you to know that colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States. The lifetime risk for developing colorectal cancer is 1 in 20. Early detection and treatment can dramatically increase the chances of survival. There are three types of highly effective colon cancer screenings. One, a fecal immunochemical test, or FIT, that is non-invasive and low risk. Two, a colonoscopy, while most widely known, is also the most invasive and carries the most risk. And three, a sigmoidoscopy, a less invasive alternative. If you're 50 or older, getting colorectal cancer screening could help save your life. Talk with your doctor about how and when you should be screened. Be well and thrive.
Dr. Jane was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd.
I'm tired all the time. What's
going on? June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She is president of the Senior Executives Association, and the executives are under assault from some quarters these days because a report said that 48% of them had not or had only been in one federal agency or one job. And it didn't differentiate between the agencies and the fact that some are themselves career paths, and it probably wouldn't be appropriate for them to go other places. Carol, before the break, I was asking about the morale in the SES, and are there critical vacancies in the SES now because of the pay caps?
Well, probably because of the pay caps and a number of other things. In fact, I was just talking to someone yesterday about where they're having difficulty at Veterans Affairs getting people to take the very top-level jobs at the big hospitals. And I think, you know, it's a problem for a number of reasons. We can't really, well, you theoretically can adjust pay if you move up in responsibility, but there's downward pressure on retention bonuses and recruitment bonuses. And as we know, the VA itself has been under attack on the Hill. I understand that, in fact, members of Congress are looking at individual executives' performance appraisals. I mean, it has gotten, when you talk about morale, I think there's a morale killer. I mean, to how many people, you know, am I responsible?
Well, and being called before a congressional committee, too, if that's the ultimate horror show, because unless you have liability insurance, a professional liability insurance, it can break the bank.
And we encourage all executives to have professional liability insurance.
Yeah. The we're talking about vacancies and morale and that sort of thing. I think one of the morale factors is this financial disclosure thing that they're finally bringing into Congress. You know, we discovered late in life that members of Congress weren't covered by insider trading information, and which may explain why so many members of Congress are millionaires. They enter as not being millionaires, and they in a few short years through wise stock market investments become millionaires. But this thing is spilling over into the SES, isn't it?
Well, I guess under the theory, however you look at it, of what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, or misery loves company, they decided an amendment was offered to apply it to basically to the SES, number of other positions as well. The problem is that the burden can be absolutely incredible. I learned the other day about someone who her husband, who is not employed by, she happens to be employed in Congress. Her husband isn't, but she has to report his information as well. And because of the trades that go on in one of his funds, she had to get all of the fund transactions for the year and report them. So there's a burden issue. But the bigger issue, I think, for a lot of executives is that all of this information would be readily accessible on a website. And people are concerned about privacy, as
identity
they should
theft.
Be, identity theft,
yeah.
Lunatics out there who may have a reason to want to target them. So it's, you know, you start adding all this up and then ask about morale, and I don't know how morale could be anything other than depressed at the moment.
The nutty neighbor thing comes to mind with all this information being made public.
Yes.
Well, what would it take if you were queen, what would it take to make the SES functional, an outstanding operation for the American people, and a place that would attract the best and the brightest?
Well, first, I guess bringing in political appointees who understand that career executives are there to make them successful and to work with them. They're not the enemy. That's part one. Secondly, if you're running a pay-for-performance system, run it fairly, give people fair standards, hold them to it, and reward them as appropriate. Don't come up with, as one department did, if the entire department doesn't meet all of its goals, no executive can get an outstanding. This is crazy. Give executives more opportunity to move up into what used to be career positions and are now largely held by political appointees. And then create a database, if you will, a central database, where you have information on all these executives, their experience, their skills, their interests, that you can access and agencies can go to when they have hard-to-fill positions, when they're headhunting, if you will, and also when there are special needs that may result in someone serving, for example, an interagency committee or a detail. So there are any number of things that we can do. And I guess the attitude has to be, let's figure out what to do with them, not to them.
The you mentioned the politicals. There are about 1,800, SES people who are political appointees?
Yeah, there'd be about 700.
700, okay. Mm-hmm. But and then with the Schedule Cs and whatnot, the plumb book, you have a couple thousand, I guess, that are available to the administration. Have you noticed over the years that the quality of these people, are they getting better, worse, or are they the same?
Unfortunately, my off-the-top-of-my-head impression from what I hear is that, generally speaking, they are getting worse. There have always been ones who come in who are not fully qualified, or, you know, this is their reward for their work on a campaign. It may be not so much that they're worse, but that the attitude is that they're a separate team, that the career executives are not on the team and can be ignored. I think there's much more of that today.
Okay. Well, that's not likely to get any better given the supercharged political atmosphere we're in here in Washington.
No, and not with the number of political positions that there are that, you know, many groups have over the years recommended a cutback. But, you know, the party in power has no interest in doing that. And the party out of power says, well, there, but for the grace of God, go we. So why would we cut back those positions?
Do you have any feeling of percentage as to how many people are promoted into the SES versus being brought in from the outside?
Yeah, I think I think the partnership report said had that number. For some reason, 17% is coming into my head, but I think that may be high.
That would be from the outside.
Yeah, the fact is, actually, there is on the books a statute that says that 70% of the SES has to be promoted from within.
Have you seen any evidence? We're a few months away from the election now. You know, this is the time of year when people start fanning out their resumes and whatnot. Have you seen any evidence of or heard about any people burrowing, you know, going to ground and trying to get rid of their political skins and morph into career civil servants?
You know, I haven't. And, you know, maybe it's just we're too distracted by all the other issues. I'm just looking at the partnership report to try and give you the number, but unfortunately I don't see. Oh, government-wide, 7%. I misspoke. Not 17, 7% from outside.
Carol, thank you so much. Remember, shows are archived on our website, so you can listen anytime, and we hope to see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Nominations for the 3rd Annual Causey Award are now being accepted. If you're wondering who could be nominated, check out our past winners. 2010, GSA's Jenny Lyman created, implemented, and managed a program to develop entry-level employees into mission-critical leaders within GSA's FAS. Nominate someone in your office who you think has made a difference helping people realize their potential. Don't delay. Nominations for the 3rd Annual Causey Awards close for Friday, April 6th. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.